So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today we have a special episode all about Google and Google's Pixel 7 event. We are recording just a couple hours after this event ended in New York, and Sherlyn was there. We have some other folks there that we will be introducing soon. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com, and you can join us Thursdays, typically around 10 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for the live stream of the show. We will show off products and have all sorts of fun. But let's dive right into all this Google stuff. And joining us, special guest, Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I hope you guys are okay, because you're both recovering from this event, from covering it live, from doing a live blog. We're back to doing those, and also getting some hands-on time with these devices. So, you know, you guys are the experts in the Google stuff here. So what is interesting you from, you know, from everything Google announced today?
Let's just do a quick high-level recap. Yeah. Today was the Pixel 7 or the Made by Google event. It was for Google to show off all its Pixel portfolio of devices. We've known forever that it was the Pixel 7, the Pixel 7 Pro, and the Pixel Watch. And at Google I.O., the company also teased the Pixel tablet, right? I wasn't so much... Okay. I had to stop acting like I'm trying to get an Emmy here. I knew that we would learn more about the Pixel tablet at this event because
they've been teasing it for a while. This is not a big secret, Google.
It's not a secret. This is public knowledge, but I had to like pretend like I didn't know the Pixel tablet would be discussed on stage today, because even though like I had the briefing today, right? But the stuff that we knew was coming for sure was the phones and the watch. And then we did get a bit of a tease of the tablet that is coming in 2023. I mean, I personally am super intrigued by the watch, but I want to hear what Sam was like most excited by.
I think you're 100% correct. Like, I think a lot of people have just been waiting for the Pixel Watch because it feels like that last piece of like the Pixel ecosystem, because we got watches, they've done tablets before, they're doing tablets again, and like they really need something to, you know, complete that like idea of ambient computing, which is kind of what that Pixel Watch is. But obviously there's also the Pixel 7 and the Pixel 7 Pro, which is kind of like the heart of, you know, the ecosystem, because it has, you know, the new Tensor G2 chip.
Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that G2 chip is also in the tablet, by the way.
That's surprising to me. And that G2 chip is something that I wrote up for us at the site. You guys kind of did the bulk of the work, and I just sat back and looked at some chip specs because it's kind of what I'm doing right now. But the G2 chip, it is worth talking about a bit, because Sherlyn, last year you did a huge profile on, you know, the Tensor chip.
Yeah.
And that was Google's first custom system on a chip design, similar to what Apple does with its A series chips on iPhones. Before, Google was just like putting in Snapdragon chips, right? Or like very, very much off the shelf parts. The Tensor was its first time making its own thing. We really liked it in the Pixel 6. What is exciting about it now in the Pixel 7?
Honestly, we didn't learn that much. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sam. Yeah. We didn't learn that much about what makes a G2 different, other than it now has a dedicated TPU, which I'm like, didn't it have TPUs? Exactly.
Exactly.
So I'm like, wait, nothing really has changed. They've upgraded the TPU, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me just tell you quickly from what I saw in the specs. This is an 8-core chip, 2 big cores, 2 medium cores, 4 little cores, 4 small cores. The middle core, the big cores are 5 megahertz faster. The middle cores are 10 megahertz faster, or maybe it may be flipped around, but like very little, very like a hair.
I was hyped for a second when you said 5 megahertz, because I thought you said 5 gigahertz.
No, I said 5.
No, you said megahertz.
Megahertz.
Mega.
And the
hertz. M.
The only difference, and they're also using the same ARM Cortex cores as last year, except the mid core, the medium core, is now at A78 instead of A76. We don't know what that means. These are just different numbers, but essentially, it does look like this chip is pretty much what Google did last year. The TPU chip you're talking about, Trillin, that deals with like AI processing, which we may talk about with some of these new features, but Basically, it seems like Google didn't really touch this hardware very much. They're just kind of building on last year's design, right?
Not on the G2. And I don't know if, Sam, you have anything to chime in here, because you've also been a Pixel 6 Pro user. But I found that over long term, the Tensor chip, whatever it is, whether it's the software of the Pixel 6 Pro or whether it's just running out of RAM or whatever, it just seems to struggle and chug a little bit over time. And it runs hot a lot. I felt like that was a Tensor problem. But I don't know if, Sam, if I'm like, you know, imagining things.
Yeah, I haven't run into like the kind of sluggishness that you're talking about quite as much. There is some like heat concerns. And I think, well, like, you know, with the Tensor G2, it's really like, you know, this is Google's like continuing expansion of like, let's try to find all the things we can use machine learning and AI like processing to apply to software features. And so, you know, it's kind of unknown of like how much better, you know, more increased tensor performance we're getting. But, you know, there are some features that are leveraging that kind of performance to unlock features on the phone. So, for example, you know, they made a big deal about the 5x telephoto zoom on the Pro, the 7 Pro. And so, you know, they're kind of redesigning how the zoom system works. So not only is it using multi-frame composition from both the main sensor and the telephoto sensor, it's also, you know, incorporating super res zoom into that. And this is another one of those things that kind of seems like, oh, we needed a little bit more, you know, machine learning performance than we could get from, say, an off-the-shelf Snapdragon or like even an Exynos.
I was going to say that this seems to be the focus of this year's phone releases, right? Like, you've got Google talking about how Tensor G2 enables all these different experiences that seem to be just software, but actually seem like now they might need to rely on hardware. Similar to the iPhone 14 Pro, where the A16 Bionic is like tied to the AOD because it's got like what, a dedicated low power display part. And there's the dynamic island that's also tapping something in the A16 Bionic. So it's a theme this year, but I think Google, when it introduced Tensor, was like the first company to really tie its features, like AI, like all this voice recognition stuff, to the fact that its chip has an AI, like a component, like a TPU.
Right. I was going to say, I kind of touch on this in my hands-on, is that because the software is so integrated into the way the Tensor chip works, it's kind of hard to tell, especially in a short time. You know, we only had, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes with the devices to like really see how deep, you know, that performance can go. And so, you know, the other thing that I think is important to think about or remember is that the Tensor chip like unlocks a lot of on-device local machine learning performance. And so you don't have to ping the cloud. And so this kind of plays into, like, you know, for example, the Pixel Recorder app. One of the new features this year is that they're going to be able to do automatic speaker taps, which I know for as a journalist, like, that is so useful for recording conversations. And then, but once again, it's all happening on the device. And, you know, they were very clear about it last year with the first gen Tensor, that, you know, they need that on-device performance in order to enable more accurate language processing. And so the ability to do different you know, speaker tags seems like that's kind of playing into the capabilities that the Tensor G2 provides.
I think at a broad level, like, let's look high level here. Like, how does the Pixel 7 compare to the iPhone 14 and 14 Pro? We are really seeing, like, how these companies just think differently, right? Like, Google has always been about... Kind of, yeah, think different. But Google has always been about computational photography. They were trying to get a lot done with one little lens for several years. Now they have multiple lenses. But Google is leaning more on what its AI can do and what like it can do with software. Whereas I feel like Apple has had some of that. But Apple is more about, we're going to get the best lenses we can get. You know, we're going to cram them all in there. And I feel like Apple leans more on the hardware side. And they're slowly trying to get into the AI side of things because they don't... They do have AI processing in the A series chips. You know, it's a thing, but not as much as Google. Google, that's always been like Google's focus.
Totally. Yeah. No, Google's always had the lead in the software and processing side of things. And that's how it's been able to beef up a lot of its photography stuff. And Apple has rightly copied a lot of that. And to that point, how many pot shots did Google take at Apple today? How many? I during this event, it was like RCS, computational photography was a term that we coined that nobody talked about before. Our Pixel 3,
the car crash detection.
We were the first 3 years ago.
I have to say, Google, you have no high horse here. Just last year, or just last week, which I had to plug into our podcast, you shut down Stadia, the thing where you walked onto stage and were like, we're gonna change the entire video game market with Stadia.
But don't even.
I can't trust you, Google.
Okay, but don't even start with that. Start from the fact that right in the same keynote where it's shitting on Apple for doing all those things, Google is like, by the way, face unlock, hey. And then, by the way, cinematic video, hey. Like, come on.
It's really funny. I also think, just on a technical level, for all of you watching the Google stream from home, a lot of us on staff were just annoyed about simple production things. I think the microphone sounded weird. The cameras were always out of focus. It was like a high school production of a play at times. I'm like, Google, you can do better than this.
I want to say that having now attended both the Apple and Google keynotes very recently, that like I appreciate that Google didn't just, you know, make us all fly out and watch a pre-recorded video from start to end. Google actually had speakers on stage. Yeah.
They had an event, and they had it in New York, whereas Apple will make you go to their home
base. Which I almost feel like would have been better if Google had made us do it on his own turf in Mountain View, because a lot of logistical challenges made this experience a whole nightmare for me, which we can get into later on. I think we can,
But, I mean, it's not like Google doesn't have offices in New York. Like, you know, there are they bought an
Google
entire
owns a
block.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they could have done it there. I think that, you know, they were trying to, like, you know, support the local, you know, like, you know, we were at National Sawdust. It was like a kind of an art venue, and, you know, they have musical performances there. And so I think they, you know, wanted to tie into the message. But I think from a logistical standpoint, you guys are correct. It's like, you know, it would have been nice to, like, you have multiple buildings over in Chelsea. Like, we could have done it there.
I mean, do it on the High Line. Like, take over just a corner of the High Line. Think about the logistics of
that. Exactly. Yeah. Think about the traffic, right? Like, just the traffic getting into Brooklyn this time around was tricky already. But
You would look cool, though. It would look cooler than Apple's event. So.
I had a lot of angry messages from Sherlyn Morning. He's like, we're not moving.
That was Brian.
You were like, oh, traffic's terrible.
Let's move on to some of the actual devices, because we've been talking about, okay, Tensor G2, not that big of a change. It is a big lean on AI processing and stuff. But the Pixel 7, the Pixel 7 Pro, I have thoughts about these designs, because not much has changed since last year. But you guys have felt these.
I want to hear this, because I know there's some very, like, you know, hard takes on this. So let me ask you, is it the camera bar that you guys have issues with?
I like it all. My thing is, for the phone nerds out there, this is HTC. This is like if HTC was still its own company and making their own little, like, you know, their own HTC One type of phones. The real Android nerds know that HTC was the one that kind of reshaped the entire Android phone market.
You're 100% correct. The HTC One M7 was the phone that got me to switch away from my iPhone to Android.
It was a better looking unibody type phone. But anyway, Google bought HTC, their phone division, like several years ago. And I feel like we're seeing the fruits of that now. Like, we're seeing that slightly more. This is a really interesting design. This is like very subtle, little bits of color. We saw it last year, but I just feel like overall, you look at the phones, you look at the watch. I think the watch is beautiful. And even you actually agree with that, according to your hands-on.
I've been kind of championing this since I saw it in person for the first time, which now that it's fully announced, I think I can tell y'all that I've seen it out in the wild before it even was announced, just because I've been having top secret meetings with execs who forgot to take it off their wrists before they met me. They would walk into a meeting room and be like, oops, I guess.
I mean, it's so seamless. They forget to
take
it off.
Yeah, it feels like nothing. But no, I am very enamored with the watch, but I don't know if we're getting into that. Yeah, I will say I challenge both of you on the phone design. I straight up told Google to their face when we were being brief, and Sam was there and he will confirm this, I should was like, I don't know, I don't like this. I was like, I don't really like your camera bar. And they were like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. I said, I like your colors. Cool. I like the colors.
We'll take that into consideration, Trillin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see. I like the camera bar. It kind of looks like a visor. For any, you know, gamers out there, I think it kind of, the standard 7 especially, it looks like that like an Among Us character. But I think, you know, it also kind of has like a little Mandalorian vibe. I think it has a little bit of personality. Also, it sits pretty much flat on a table. There's no wobble like an iPhone, which is, I agree. That means a little bit to me. And you know, but to your point, I think, you know, these, it's the same design we've seen before. It's, you know, refreshed. It's a little slicker. I do like that the frame of the phone is attached seamlessly to that camera bar. And so you get a little bit of added durability. And so it feels like, you know, a more of like a considered thing, not a huge departure from
definitely not a huge departure. But it feels the like, to your point, Sam, the bar, the first time I touched the Pixel 7 Pro on my own outside of the like a test environment, it was like, oh, yeah, the bar's not as obvious as before, not as annoying. And I do appreciate that it's symmetrical and lays flat on a table. Yeah.
I just have to say, design-wise, these phones just look unique.
Yes,
they look
for sure
different, right? If you're walking down the street and you see somebody just like tapping away at their phone, take one look, like, boom, Pixel phone. And that is an accomplishment. Like, that is something Google has not managed to achieve until, honestly, until the Pixel 6 last year. But it's a design feat because there are so many smartphones out there. It's so hard to like differentiate. And I think that alone is
sure,
interesting.
Sure, but yeah. I really love the Pixel 3.
Oh, we got
3.
The hater coming in.
I love the Pixel 3. The Pixel 3. Do you remember that not pink Pixel 3, the almost pink Pixel 3?
It's perfectly fine.
It was
it
was beautiful. And that reminds me of the Pixel tablet a little bit, which we can get into later. But no, okay. So, well, yeah, go on.
Yeah. My thing is like, yeah, Pixel 3, cool. Once in a while, Google had like a nice little inspiration for a cool design. But what is cool about the family now is like Pixel 7, Pixel 7 Pro, the watch, even the tablet.
Yeah.
And I am an Android tablet hater. Even the tablet looks cool. And there is like a cohesion to this overall design. And it's kind of beautiful. It reminds me, we bring this up a lot, but the Spike Jonze movie Her, where technology was a little organic and a little subdued and not like filled with metal and a lot of boxes. It's very more like something you live with and very subtle. I kind of appreciate that. That is a nice move.
Can we talk about the best thing about the Pixel 7?
Go for it.
That the freaking starting price is $599. I mean, come on. It's like half the starting price of an iPhone, basically. It's ridiculous. It's a lot of top-notch features for very much a fraction of the price. I mean, okay, maybe you don't get three cameras on the Pixel 7. So $600 is, I guess, comparable to maybe the iPhone mini when it was around. But no, even the iPhone 14 base model starts at $799.
Yeah. Right. Good pricing. Yeah.
And if you look at the 7 Pro, that starts at $899. That's the same price as the iPhone 14 Plus. The iPhone 14 Pro Max, that starts at $1,100. So there's a $200 gap between the Pixel 7 Pro and the iPhone 14 Pro Max, in order if you want that, you know, telephoto, those extra lenses.
And you get a 120 hertz screen on the Pro at least, right? I don't know. I don't remember if you get it on the base 7, but you get 120 hertz.
No, you definitely don't. Yeah, you definitely don't.
It's 90 hertz on the
at
base.
At least 90. At least 90 for $599. Mm-hmm. I don't want to keep.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so good job.
Aggressive, like nice aggressive design from Apple or from Google, and also aggressive pricing. And I think that is. That's kind of huge. I see one question from the chat. Dude named Charlie asked, should I ditch my 13 mini for the new Pixel? I mean, that's a phone from last year, so I would say hold on to that for another year. But
it's a big choice too.
Compelling. These are compelling phones. So yeah,
it's a big decision to make when you're switching OSs too. So I there's more to weigh than just like what are the specless features.
What will happen to all your iMessage chats?
Yeah.
Broken.
Are you ready
forever.
To
all your friends will never forgive you.
Yeah. Separate from your family. But anyway, back to like Google's products, right? Like I know we were kind of dipping our toes in the water with this discussion, but the freaking Pixel watch. I can't even. I'm just like, okay, so when this thing
It's a good watch.
Oh
finally.
My gosh. Yeah. So watch. We've been waiting how many years for this now? Maybe like 10? I want to say.
It's been rumored for like 3 years straight and now
finally here.
Oh, it's
been rumored since before I joined Engadget, first of all. So that's at least 6 years.
We call those the good years, yeah, as I recall. Yeah.
Yes. So then the thing that really stands out about this to me, and I know this seems like such a small watch nerdy thing to say, but like it doesn't have lugs. Like Apple Watches don't have lugs either, so it's very similar to the Apple
Watch. What do you
mean by lugs? By lugs, I mean the like little brackety thing that look like paper clips that attach a watch to a exactly.
Yeah.
So those are very much a fashion choice sometimes with watches. Like Scoggins watches are like that. A lot of Fossil and fashion watches are like that too. You will find that Samsung's Galaxy watches very often come with lugs that are like chunkier. They're not like
too big.
Yeah, they're just
they
big.
Like hold the watch above your wrist. I don't like
yeah
that.
On the
yeah.
stream Sam is showing
so you can
the
see
like
they kind of stick
they
out.
Stick
yep.
out. That's how the strap attaches to the case of the watch. So I think to finally see an Android watch not have that and have the attachment of the strap, the mechanism be so similar to Apple's, except for actually infuriating, it was like a great change. And because of this design, it makes the case of the watch itself feel like, I've said this several times, it feels like a rounded, smooth, polished pebble. And like,
yeah, it looked exactly.
Oh my
yeah.
God, it feels so good to keep flipping around in my hand. Oh, y'all know I love to fondle shit.
Yeah. You know what else was a pebble? Rounded, smooth pebble? The HTC Pebble from several years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, calling it back.
What
yeah,
HTC Pebble. This is all HTC, baby. And I was looking at the chat room. A lot of people agree with me. Many dozens of people agree with me. This is a big win. This is a big win for Google, honestly. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Android watches. I think this thing looks good. My only thing is that I think the bezel is bigger than people actually realize.
So,
because the screen
yes.
has a black background, but the bezel is actually kind of large around it too.
But Sam did point out something. I think it was you, Sam, or was it Chris Velasco, who happened to also be there? When you said the dome shape of the screen sort of hides some of that bezel thickness. Was that you? Yeah. Sam, do you want to explain?
Yeah, yeah. And so they were saying like on stream that like they were kind of inspired by a water drop. And I think like between pebble and water drop, like that really describes the watch really well. And then, you know, from every person we've talked to, everyone's like, oh man, like the Pixel watch is just really pretty. And I think it's just like striking in a way that's like, oh man, it's easier to picture it on your wrist. And then, you know, when you're talking about the lugs, they made it super easy to switch out the bands. And we were talking to like a lot of the Googlers and be like, oh, I just switch it out every day. It takes like it takes 2 seconds. And it's like, so they're mixing and matching it to go with their
that's
outfit,
cool.
to go with their mood.
That's,
and
that's,
I think that's
more annoying than I'd like on an Apple Watch. You know, Apple says it's easy, but I screaming into the microphone.
Sorry.
I have several Apple Watch bands. It is always a little too annoying. It's like, which one goes up? Which one goes down? I gotta, it doesn't always slide in.
I get that part of the switching out the Apple Watch band situation. But I will say, having tried both now, the Apple Watch band is still easier to switch out because it's one button you press down and then you slide it out, you're changing straps.
It's not that hard.
It's really not hard. No, the Apple Watch yeah. is not hard at all. The Pixel watch takes a little bit more finesse, I want to say, because you're not just, they describe it like a DSLR lens changing situation. And you might see footage of this in our hands-on video where I struggle for, I think, a full minute, like how to put
it
on.
It's not that bad. It's a little twist.
Tiny little twist. And it's probably because I'm overthinking it, right? So I want to say that this is probably just difficult on your first two or three attempts. But once you figure it out, you'll get it in no problem. I'm just saying.
You kind of learn the thing.
Yeah. Just know that there's a learning curve.
This is a pretty watch. Okay. What does it do? You know, like, is it better than other Android watches?
Yeah.
Why is Google even doing this, to be honest? Like, that's my question. There's so many other Android watches there.
I want to quickly address this point that on the chat, CF542 is asking, did they produce just one size? Yes, only one watch case size is available. This is the 41mm model, but you do get options of different band sizes. And honestly, it's not too big for my wrist, which is great, but it also didn't look out of place on, like, a larger wrist. I will say, Sam, you have a larger wrist, right? You like the size?
Slightly. I don't have like big like bear paw wrists. So I've never had an issue with like sizing.
Yeah. So I don't know that maybe if you have like different size wrists, it might look funny on you. I haven't seen the occasion where it does, but it is a choice to make a case in only one size and make that size be 41mm because it is the smallest Apple Watch size. So I don't know about visibility and what that does for it. But then to that point, right, what Devendra said, what does this watch do? For the most part, a lot of the watch stuff now lives on watch faces. That's just smartwatches in general now, because now tech companies understand what we want isn't like to hang out and play Snake on our watches, except for I kind of do. We don't want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
We need a series of videos of Sherlyn just doing the most basic games.
Oh my god, yes.
On like really high end devices, because that is my
watching
history.
YouTube on like a 1-inch screen.
Playing Tetris on the Apple Watch Ultra.
Man.
Anyway.
Okay.
So what Google has done is to create like 18 families of different watch faces now. And by families, they just mean like they have this template that you can customize with different colors, styles, and complications. So 18 families of watch faces on which you can either add your, you know, favorite people's pictures as the background, which for me will be lots of selfies. And then you can put different complications on there so you have glanceable access to your steps progress and all that stuff. And this is a good way also to then seg into what else it does, right? Steps progress, like your heart rate. The Google Pixel Watch will sample your heart rate at a rate, sample your, I guess, your pulse at a rate of once every second. And according to Google, that's a lot faster or more frequent than competing smartwatches. This is really the result of a marriage between Fitbit and Google, right? Because Fitbit brings that great heart rate, like, sensing technology. Google brings that, like, processor managing, AI filtering sound out kind of info.
And HTC brings the design, yeah. Yeah.
But there are a couple of features that, like, you can clearly see have that, like, Fitbit DNA. There's, like, the workout readiness feature. So it's like, you know, hey, if you, like, didn't sleep all that well the night before and you haven't been, like, doing a lot of steps, maybe today take it easy or something like that. And you know, that's kind of something that I appreciate. Obviously, and there's the sleep tracking, too. Did they talk about battery life on stage? Yeah. I don't know if they specifically.
So they might
not
have mentioned it on. I think they did in one of the videos, right? You get up to 24 hours. They're calling it all day battery. And it's once every, like, you 24 hours is a good claim. It's nowhere near anything Fitbit makes, right? Fitbit's devices typically get you at least 3 days of juice. Even something like the Sense, like their highest end smartwatch, the Sense will last you like 3 days at the very least.
Well,
but
yeah, because they have much simpler operating.
Exactly.
Like they don't do as much as like an Android device.
They don't even know what a third party app is. They don't even know how to let you reply to a message from your home screen. Like, this is all dumb shit. But the rest of Wear OS 3.5, which is, by the way, what they're calling it, Wear OS 3.5, it's kind of a tweak on the Wear OS 3 that they co-engineered with Samsung last year. The rest of it is very similar to that version of Wear OS, which is the Tizen-ish mishmash, right? You've got the side-scrolling general interface where it's cards that you can reorganize and show like your steps, your weather widget, your calendar, your reminders, your alarms, whatever, as you keep side-scrolling. Then you drag down from the top and you get your quick settings. You drag up from the bottom and you get like your notifications. You have assistant access. You have GPS support. You have Google Pay. Basically, everything that the Apple Watch does, right? Like, this is watchOS but Android. And this is...
It's copying, but also it's good to see. It's good to see that Google is finally here.
Wait,
that's all.
I am intrigued, right? I still have my reservations about how this will do, and I can't wait to really, like, just test it in the real world. I think what will make or break Wear OS, at least when it's compared to watchOS, is that third-party app support. I am concerned. I am concerned that they won't get enough hype from developers to build out like things like, I don't know, even Spotify doesn't seem to work the same on Wear OS sometimes compared to watchOS, right? Like, it's just people don't prioritize non-Apple products sometimes. But anyway, I want to know. Anyway. I also can't wait to test this. Okay, look. This thing is so small and light, especially that, y'all will see me freaking out about the stretch band. There's this band they make called it's like basically Apple's Solo Loop, but like a different material, so it's easier to kind of slip over your wrist. Oh my God. Oh, okay. It's
materials, design.
But I like how you're getting excited for what to me is like a sock for your wrist.
It is a sock.
It's like, that's a wrist sock.
It's like stretchy and you can put it over your hand and you don't have to do any buckles, but like, That's what it is.
That's all
don't get
want.
Me wrong. Very, very convenient.
It's so convenient, but then you put it on and it's secure on your wrist. And also, the other thing that gets me so excited about it is that it's finally a watch that's low profile enough that I feel like I can comfortably wear it to bed, possibly.
Okay. I feel like that is your ultimate watch test. So, okay, we're all excited for the Pixel Watch. I think it looks really cool. Check out Sherlyn's hands-on and all that stuff. And you produce some videos too, so people can see this thing in action. We've got a couple other things to just mention here too. There were some cool accessibility and assistant updates among all this news. One feature I really liked is Google focused on a feature that lets people who are blind take selfies. It just like gives you like, hey, move your phone up left, up right. It'll help you like catch the light in your face. That is super cool. I feel like that is a really useful thing. What else, you know, really stuck out with you guys?
the fact that, I mean, guided frame was definitely something I wanted to shout out, so I'm glad you brought it up. I'm concerned that it doesn't seem to, I'm not sure how it works for people who are visually impaired just yet. We did do a brief demo of it, me and Sam, at our little briefing, and it was able to kind of make sure that there were two people in the frame, so it was trying to make sure both faces were within view before it said, now you're ready. But when I saw this demo, I was like, oh, but that's not the most flattering angle you could have picked.
Right.
So I'm still, I'm like,
They may not have a selfie expert on staff.
I don't know if the computer algorithms have figured out what's like the perfect selfie or how to take the perfect selfie yet. So that might be asking a little much. But like, I appreciate that like it's kind of using the talkback feature that's built into the Android accessibility umbrella. And so I really like that it's a kind of expanding those accessibilities without like forcing people to learn like a whole new app or anything, which, you know, I think is the right way to do it.
I mean, then there's the assistant feature updates. I honestly, at this point, can't remember what they are. So it just tells you that it's not like a huge deal.
It wasn't a huge thing. It was one thing we thought we'd hear more about. There are a lot of cool camera features I just want to shout out. Like, kind of as part about this. We talked about cinematic blur a little bit. It's exactly like cinema mode on the iPhones. Gives you, like, blurry backgrounds. There are some other useful features. The sort of, like, there's photo unblur, which will kind of save a bad shot, and going kind of using the AI processing on the Pixel 7 to do this, but also it can go back and save some of your older photos too. And I do wonder how well that's going to work, because that is actually really interesting, and it's probably a problem a lot of people have.
And from the samples we have seen at the keynote and the demos, we're not seeing drastic difference. They're not going to like fully crispen. That's the word.
It's not going to be magic.
Right. It's going to just slightly save it.
Right, and we saw a couple of demos where like someone was taking like an old black and white like film photo that had been like digitized and then uploaded to Google Photos, and so it's like this the photo unblur feature works on any photo that you can upload to Google Photos on a Pixel 7, and so it's like doesn't matter what camera shot it, doesn't matter when it was shot it, and so I think there's a huge range of like things to be tested. So I'm really curious to see how that works. And then they also improved face unblur, which is like, you know, if you're taking pictures of like a child, which never stops moving, it's like, you know, that can be like definitely really helpful to be like, oh, I just want it a little bit sharper. I don't want their, you know, their eyes to look blurry or stuff like that. You know, you want to send the best pics to the grandparents and whatnot, you know.
That's the ultimate thing. There's a lot of like cool little camera things too. Like both the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro have 50 megapixel rear cameras now as like the base camera. The Pro adds the telephoto zoom as well. But because of that, because kind of like what Apple's doing, you can use the, what do you call it, the super res zoom to kind of really hone in and like get some really good zooming too. That's pretty cool.
So what it's doing too is exactly what Apple is doing, where it's using that high res 50 megapixel sensor, the info capture from that, to create a sort of 2x view at sensor quality, which therefore gives you another like sort of fake so-called camera to work with. So you've got the 1x that is quad binned into 12.5 megapixels. Then you've got 2x on the viewfinder, which is using the 50 megapixel to create a zoomed in view, and then so on and so forth. You've got 5x, 10x, etc. And Google's been very good at doing this sort of super res zoom stuff for a very long time since it debuted on the Pixel 3, and is stitching all these things together and magically kind of cleaning up all of that data and that noise. It's also promising clear pictures at all zoom ranges. So let's start from telephoto. Telephoto going up to 30 times zoom is promising you like tack sharp pictures in despite your hand shake, right? So that I would love to test.
And there's that new feature that kind of, you know, throws up a little mini viewfinder to kind of help you frame your shot, because anyone who's tried to take a picture at 30x zoom knows it's like really hard to keep something in focus or in frame.
Samsung called and was like, we used that UI first. But anyway.
Yes, it has been available on the Ultra series. Yep.
That's something. There's also additional stability controls too, right? So when you're zooming in, I feel like it's going to be a little more stable.
It's locking onto a subject to keep your subject stable while you're framing up the shot too. And then also, of course, video stabilization is going to be improved. And then speaking of the zoom levels across zoom ranges, right? We're not only talking about telephoto zooms, we're also talking about macro zoom. Well, the company is now using its ultra wide camera, which by the way also has a wider field of view now of about 125.8 degrees, which makes it the biggest on the market right now, because I believe before that that reigning champion was Samsung at 123 degrees field of view. But anyway, the macro camera can get up to 3 centimeters close to your subject.
That's pretty close. I like this trend towards macro cameras in all devices. I've used it. I really like it with bugs and plants.
God, why would you photograph my bugs? iPhone.
You brought up the B word.
Brought up the B word. You can really get some. See all the antenna, all the like little hair and the bugs. It's so much fun. Okay, good photo stuff, and honestly, really competitive with what Apple is doing now. Let's talk about something I'm excited about that I was not expecting to be, and that is the Pixel tablet. And we have talked for years on this podcast that Android tablets are a joke. Yeah. Really, the only company making them that are any good is Samsung. And it's actually, we're about 10 years since Samsung introduced the first Galaxy Tab S, I believe. It was around now. That's been like the highlight of Android tablets forever. This thing looks fine. Looks like a tablet, a normal tablet. I thought it was pretty boring until somebody attached it to a little speaker base and effectively turned it into a home hub. And that is cool. The ability to just like plop it down on a speaker that's in your kitchen or something, use it as a sort of like, you know, a video type device, and then pick it up and take the screen away when you're leaving the house. That's cool. I'm down with that. It's a shame Google can't get it out this year.
Yeah, there's a lot of details they can't release yet, but they have shared this will run with the Tensor G2 chip. It will also run Android with support for Material U and a split screen and stylus input. The company isn't sharing details about stylus input, except to say, at least they confirmed to me, that third-party styluses, styli, will be supported at least from the start, and then because they can't share more, I have a feeling we are going to see Google Pencil maybe, right? Like, it's like, I'm speculating here.
You basically, mean everything, right? Apple's doing? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to call it like something else instead of Pencil. The crayon, whatever. And then the screen size, we don't actually know, but it looks very much like a 10-inch or bigger device to me. Yeah, it looks basically 10 inches.
Yeah, at least.
And that speaker dock, it's a charging base with the similar audio quality to the Nest Audio, not the Nest Mini, the Nest Audio. So bigger sound, you've got magnetic attachments. But I am concerned about using it as like kind of a video call device, because the angle at which it slopes on the speaker base looks like it's pointing upwards, and that might not be the most flattering. It's not adjustable.
Okay, but I have a pro tip. You can take the tablet off the base.
Yeah.
Sure, and then you can hold it however you want. Not the point, right? Like when they say use this as a video calling machine, they want you to put it on the base.
I think it's more like this is on your kitchen counter. And when you're looking at your kitchen counter, then you are above it. So it does kind of have to point up a little bit. And I feel like that is a sort of use case.
Right, it's not really a dedicated conference call when you're at work sort of device. That makes sense. Yeah.
It should be movable. At the very least, it's not. You, like,
just FYI, it's not. I asked, and it's not.
It's not. Okay. So, exciting. Google got me excited for a tablet. Google made me think your hardware designs are actually pretty. And this is after just a week after Google like totally tanked it on Stadia, and like basically everything we predicted about the failure of Stadia came true. Can't trust this company with some products. And meanwhile, we have all these things coming out. So anyway, we've got, go check out all our coverage. Sherlyn and Sam have done a bunch of hands-ons. We've got a bunch of posts from everybody on the site. So that's engadget.com. There is some other Google news, and I feel like
we're just going to
blow through this, because I don't care about this as much. And I'm actually very angry about Nest, because I have 2 Nest thermostats, and Google is awful when it comes to supporting these things. So what we have is a new Nest wired Nest doorbell. It's kind of thinner and smaller. Hey Google, welcome to what Arlo was doing several years ago.
You just triggered like 7 people's speakers or something, I think. Exactly, but yeah.
No. Oh well. I mean, this Google event triggered everybody's speakers apparently. God. But yeah, apologies for that. There's a new doorbell. There's a revamp for the Home app.
That to me is interesting.
That is good because again, the Home app is garbage. So much of what Google does with these Nest devices is pure garbage. I set up schedules in my Home app. Nest is just like, hey bro, you want to be cold in the middle of the afternoon when nobody's upstairs? Cool, I'll make it happen. I'm like, no, Google,
do you
stop.
Not, you're you maybe not have like something like Nest Renew that's interfering with it. Okay.
No, I don't have any of those things turned on. I'm just like, look, I wrote down the schedule for you, Google. Just listen to it. And then sometimes the Nest device is just like, don't pay attention to anything. There's also a new Nest Wi-Fi Pro, which is a it's their router thing, but also it's a mesh router system. So that's kind of cool. Hey, folks. I would be very careful about buying any Nest products.
That's not
at this point.
Okay. Well, I am ready to get some in for testing. I do.
Do you
I have
own
a Nest
any,
camera. I have a Nest thermostat I've never installed, okay. And I have several Nest speakers and a Nest hub.
Yeah, you don't. Unless you're
I am.
You don't own.
No,
it.
I am living with the Nest camera and the Nest hub displays and Nest audio. Okay,
I'm talking
but
about
just
thermostats.
Okay, so
I'm
you're talking specifically about talking about Come the on. One Nest device that made you upset. Meanwhile, I have three different Nest devices, and you're saying I don't live with Nest?
Sherlyn,
excuse
what
me.
What was the first Nest device?
I know
what
it was the thermostat.
Device?
Okay,
what was,
okay.
What did this company
okay, thermostats.
Make its name
but
on?
Here's yeah, what I'll tell you. Yeah. Here's what I'll tell you is that they're revamping the app not only to make it like more easy to customize for like your favorite screens, favorite functions up front, and also to help you customize your automations and stuff like that. They're also adding a script editor. By the way, you can also access your Nest feed streams, your Nest camera streams from the web. There's going to be a web option soon, and in that web option, you're going to be able to access a script editor for automations. Power users geek out now, but okay.
That's exactly what I want.
The other thing,
user.
Though, is that they're going yeah. to start. They understand that. I think the one thing that they kept trying to make clear to me during our briefing is that they understand that there's a lot of pieces of this that haven't fully been ingested into the Google Home app yet. But they're working on it, and they keep. I was like, why is it so difficult? And they were like, there's a lot of different pieces to make sure that they're doing it, integrating it right, and especially the data streams that are coming through. So I get that it's frustrating. Now I absolutely agree with you. Also, sometimes I freaking hate my Nest speakers. I hate those. Bitches. Sorry.
No, absolutely. Google bought Nest in January.
I don't know.
When?
I
would, yeah. 2014. 8 years ago. Yeah, you weren't born yet. You definitely had not, you hadn't emerged from journalism school by that point, I believe. But 2014. And we're still looking at these things and like, oh, it's hard.
You're so
it's
mean.
Hard to integrate
You're
our
so
software
to
together.
And Nest.
Oh, my God. I am mean because
it's true,
it makes me angry and I have to live with it every day. And then sometimes my Nest thermostat just lose Wi-Fi.
Yeah, mine too.
Like, hey,
oh
bro.
My gosh,
hey,
mine
bro.
Too.
Hey, I forgot how to connect to the internet. I'm going to need a couple days to figure it out. And that's what it takes. It takes several days
Sam,
for it to reset.
You...
Anyway.
I'm like kind yeah. of shocked because I have a Nest thermostat and it's been like it's, fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even either on like the super positive side or the super negative. It's been fine. Like I set my schedules twice a year in like summer and winter, and it's like, I don't.
That makes
it.
Me mad because my Nest speakers will lose connection to the Wi-Fi every now and then. They're like, oh, I don't like routers anymore. Lose bye. All. Just like no.
It may also be easier in like a smaller like in an apartment space, Sam. Like it may make more sense. If like,
I think that there's definitely yeah. something to that. Like yeah. my place is like a 2-bedroom. It's like relatively small, and so like I have one router. I don't have a need for mesh stuff or anything like that. I have like great coverage throughout all of my house. And so like, I don't have, it doesn't drop connections. Like I don't like every once in a while, I'll like, you know, say, okay, G. And then like, she just won't answer. And like, okay, that happens.
She's busy. She's watching her.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah.
She's just,
it's raining. Let her chill, you know?
Right. Robots need a break too. Right. I know.
I was just going to say that I live in a small apartment too. And I have these Wi-Fi issues. So I don't know if it's necessarily just the size of the apartment.
It's a lot.
You're living in boxes right now.
It happened
okay?
when
you
I live in my studio
to
without boxes too. But anyway, we are getting too caught up.
All right, let's all give Sherlyn congratulations.
Not yet. I'm not done. But thank
really
you.
Tough. I know it's been. You're in the middle of it. So anyway, Nest stuff. Hey, folks, be careful before you buy Nest products because it's a nightmare out there. It's hard out there. Let's move on to some other news real quick, because we're going to have to run soon. I have reviewed Intel's Arc A750 and A770 graphics cards. And hey, you know what's impossible? Something I never thought we'd actually see. Good video cards from Intel.
Yes.
Good discrete
Agreed.
Video cards. And hey, they're here. And it's kind of amazing. Not to like rewind time once again, Trillin, to a time you may not recall. The last time Intel talked about doing, hey, we're going to get into high-end graphics, we're going to take on NVIDIA, was 2009. Intel was like talking about like, we are building up this whole project, guys. Don't worry. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Before it's even released, dead. I can't trust Intel for any of these things. So they killed that project. They focused on integrated graphics for years. We have covered like the sort of like soap opera happening because the guy responsible for AMD's sort of resurgence of their Radeon graphics cards, Raja Koduri, I covered him when he launched the RX 480 back in 2017 at Computex. You were there, Shulin, I believe. So he announced that was a big deal for AMD. That was AMD coming back into like decently good graphics cards. That was a $200 card that could deal with VR headsets. That was pretty cool. Then Intel stole Raja Koduri away. Big drama, big soap opera. At the end of 2017, Intel brought him over. And for the past several years, he's been working on revamping Intel stuff. We've talked about Intel's Xe graphics. That's a sort of like better onboard, better like integrated graphics that they've been putting into new chips. But yeah, now we've got new mid-range cards. And hey, guys, they're actually good. For gamers, this is great news. The A750 is $289. The A770 is $329. And they're competing with cards that sell for $400 or more from NVIDIA and AMD. So go check out my review. Go look at the benchmarks. I think it all looks pretty good. The only thing is, I don't, just like Google and Nest, I don't know if we can really trust Intel this much. Like, if you invest in this ecosystem and in these cards, you better hope Intel is going to keep up with driver updates, and you better hope they're ready for every new game drop to really optimize these drivers. And you better hope they don't just like say, hey, we're bored, we're tired of GPUs in several years, and then your support is dead, you know? So those are all risks you take, but if you're looking for a good deal, I think these things are cool.
Speaking
other news.
I just want to say, speaking of toxic relationships, hey, Twitter has agreed that it will let Elon Musk buy it again. Somehow they have...
That's not the way it worked. I mean, Twitter didn't agree.
Twitter was
suing Elon Musk.
Right.
Buy us. And then Elon Musk was like, no, bro. Bots. No.
There's
so,
a lot.
So many things. That was a late night acquisition and I made some mistakes. But the current news, and there's actually stuff happening right now. Current news is that he's back on board to basically end the suit against him because of this whole deal and him trying to back out of it. But also news that happened recently, this deal may be stuck in debt contingency, which is a thing he was adding to this deal after the fact to be like, hey, I need several billion. $13 billion. He's saying he would like to use debt financing to cover that. And they're like, nah, man, you said money. We want, you know, we want this. So that is
clearly
where
a breaking
right
story.
Now, right. Breaking story. It's not him trying to back out of it, but it's also him trying to be like, I don't want this to cost me as much as I thought it would. So that's a thing we're following. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I will immediately just lean, like, I won't leave Twitter because we all kind of have to use it a little bit, but I will be stuck. I will be stuck, like, basically just not using Twitter as much. So that's my main thing. Yeah. Another thing, the stupid Tesla robot. We saw that.
I looked at it over the weekend briefly when I surfaced from my Apple drowning, and I saw people were freaking out over some sort of biped robot on Twitter
with like a desktop on its chest. It looks hilarious because it's like giant fans. It's all wires and open and everything. Yeah.
Look.
This is the Tesla Optimus robot. Hey,
I'm sorry. I'm annoyed at the name Optimus because that's like, there is one robot who gets to be called Optimus, and that's not it.
Yep. And he has to be voiced by Peter Weller. They showed it off. My thing is the opening part where they like wheel out this robot in a hand truck looks hilarious because it looks like it can't really move on its own. It does walk around a little later. But it's, I don't trust anything from this man at this point. So go check out the videos, folks. Andrew Tarantola wrote a piece about this, and he goes in depth with all this too. But there's a lot I don't like about this. I don't trust this. Let's move on to like a nice story that you really want to talk about, Trillin, because I feel like this is
very relevant
to
my interest right now. And I think long-term listeners to the Engadget podcast know every year I have a new pet project, a pet passion area. And this year apparently it's all about fitness and fitness tech. And, Gatorade this week announced that it's making, I see Sam face palming very hard right now. It's launched a new smart water bottle that will tell you how much water you need to drink after a workout. Now,
I love that you are the one who checked this out because you are the thirst queen.
Well, she didn't.
I did.
This is like the perfect device
for
you.
I am the thirst queen.
Okay. You didn't write the post, apparently.
But I am the thirst queen. And this is a typical Gatorade bottle. It's actually a little bit bigger. I've been using it for a few days now, but the software was not really ready for a bit. I had to like test flight the beta or something. I know.
Could you drink your water? You can.
It's a screw cap and a squeeze bottle. I know. So I unscrewed the cap and I just drink it. I've been drinking it using this gross water like fountain at my gym for a bit now. And what it does is basically it's got a ring of lights on the lid and it can tell you using a marker to show you how much you need to replenish your how much you need to drink to replenish your hydration or your fluids based on how much you sweat. By the way, using that dumbass sweat patch that I checked out last year, that dumbass sweat patch, which is so inaccurate at telling how much I sweat or how much water I've lost, is being used as the gauge. Yeah,
it's one job.
To see how much.
You know what else is really good at telling when you're thirsty? The human body.
Actual thirst.
We would not have been able to survive as a species until, you know, for thousands of years if we
case you couldn't read your own thirst cues, you can use this hydration bottle. I am testing it. I just want to say that like I didn't write it, but I am still testing it, and we might have coverage about it out soon, but meantime it's launched. I also want to
Gatorade so thirsty.
Is pretty thirsty. But I like it. I also wanted to shout out that Sam, oh my gosh, you basically killed yourself and got a review of the iPhone 14 Plus up. What was it, just like yesterday? Oh my gosh.
It was midnight
yesterday. Holy crap, in addition to prepping for Google, in addition to everything else that's going on in the background that we can't talk about publicly yet. Well done. Thank you for that. Everybody should go check out Sam's review of the iPhone 14 Plus on Engadget.com.
Do you like it? I feel like that's the main question.
I like it, but I also feel like the headline kind of tells it all. It's an iPhone, but bigger.
It's big.
Yeah. I mean, look, it fills in that gap in the portfolio, okay? You had the iPhone 14, and then there's no big non-Pro Max version. There's no big screen iPhone. So now there is one.
It used to be the 10R, which itself was a weird thing, right? Because it wasn't as fast as it was very strange. Instead of mini, they went big. One day I will get a headline that's just it big. Like that's all.
Yes, I wait for it. I mean, listen, so like, you know, if you want a big screen but don't want to pay the extra money for a Pro Max, there you go. So big display, and it has really, really great battery life. So if that's, you know, like you really like need a phone that can last multiple days. In my experience, the 14 Plus definitely delivers. I charged it was like once every 2 days. You can even get like 2.5 days out of it. And I'm like, it's not just light use. I'm like, you know, watching videos, playing games, all that.
I also know a lot of older users appreciate bigger screens because by the point where there's a point where you have to use reading glasses basically to see phone screens very well. So having something bigger so you don't always need the glasses.
And you can increase the font and without like seriously decreasing the amount of content you're seeing. So it's like it is a nice trade off, especially, you know, for older folks who eyes aren't.
And it's it's not the highest refresh rate for sure, but it's also like.
Right. It's still 60 hertz like the standard iPhone 14.
I do want to point out that this is Sam's, first iPhone review. So welcome to Apple Land. Hope we win you over.
Welcome to Apple Land.
It's nice.
It's nice there.
You haven't done one elsewhere, Sam?
I've helped out in previous reviews, but, you know, Apple, you know, they want to make sure the people who review their stuff know their stuff. And so, you know, It takes some time to get in there.
Congrats. It's a tough thing to review any of these devices. So thanks for that. And be sure to check out all of Sherlyn's reviews, too. Like, talk about killing yourself. Like, you were back to back all the Apple stuff, plus these events. You know, it's a busy time. It's Techtober, as we like to say. And Techtober is just beginning because we have the Microsoft event next week, and I'm going to be in town for that. So that's going to be fun. That's pretty much it. You know, there's been a lot of news, a lot of Google stuff. We will move on to our pop culture picks. Okay, Sherlyn, what do you have for us this week?
I honestly don't think this will surprise anyone. House of the Dragon. Y'all have been watching this, right? Like, everybody's been watching? No? No? Just a tiny unknown. Nobody knows that. Okay, cool. I've been chilling out to that. I mean, I'd like spent some of the last few weeks catching up on Game of Thrones, or rewatching Game of Thrones, really. And then now, I'm up on House of the Dragon. It's surprisingly nice. I thought it would be really bad, but it's actually not bad.
Sterling's review. That would be bad, but not bad. Thank you. I still need to catch up because the first like three episodes just didn't really grab me compared to the Lord of the Rings shows. I feel like the Lord of the Rings ones are a lot of fun. Sam, what do you got?
Right, so that's actually a perfect segue because for a long time I was like kind of like doing one episode of House of the Dragon, and then more recently I've been getting deeper into Rings of Power, and that show is like, it feels like kind of a slow burn to me because I'm not like a diehard Tolkien fan, but like, so I wasn't like, it's very pretty, and I like actually want to kind of like commend Amazon Prime shows like Wheel of Time and this for being just really nice looking shows.
Yeah.
Like,
well, they spent a ton of money on all of them.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, they got the budget to prove it. But yeah. And so, but like, it was kind of a slow burn. I was like not super interested because I think they were spending a little too much time telling too many different stories. But now that things are starting to pick up, I'm starting to get more into it. So I like, you know, I like where it's going. I'm more hopeful that like they'll really dive into stuff in season two, and it seems like they're really setting up. This is like the setup season, and they're really going to use that season two to like dive into like more of the world and more of the characters. Because I think there's the character development is not quite where I want it.
It's big high fantasy in a way that I kind of appreciate. You know, it's not as serious as Game of Thrones. There is like big fighting monsters, but there's not like brutal violence. There's not
I read that was a conscious decision because they wanted to make it more family friendly, a little bit more accessible, not like the brutalistic tendencies that like, you know, people love but also hate about Game of Thrones.
For sure. And yeah, no sexual assault in this show, so that's something you always got to watch out for in any Game of Thrones show. I want to chat about real quick another big IP, because I guess that's the mood we're in right now.
Yep.
Andor, the latest Star Wars show. I've been kind of so-so on the Star Wars shows so far. I feel like the Boba Fett one was kind of like fun Saturday morning cartoon. The Obi-Wan show, nice bit of nostalgia, but it's not really doing anything new with Star Wars or the franchise. Andor is incredible, and I do think everybody should watch it. If I had more time, I'd write up something for us at the site, because it's produced by Tony Gilroy, the guy who basically in the background saved Rogue One and made that movie watchable. He's also the guy behind, he wrote the Bourne Identity movies. Yeah, Jason Bourne is his character. Michael Clayton, one of the greatest movies of the past like 20 years, he wrote as well. And this is very much turning Andor, who played by Diego Luna, who's introduced in Rogue One, into one of those characters, a sort of like very, very noble and strong fixer who's trying to basically take down the Empire as a rebel. And it's very much into spycraft and politics in a way too, and just the sort of like banal evil of bureaucracy and things that Star Wars people would be like, where's my lightsabers? Where's Luke Skywalker? There's none of that here, because it's all just like on the ground stuff of rebellions and how rebellions work. And I think it's really fascinating and it's really good. I'm loving it. So check out Andor, all of you, I'm sure, would be into the show. If you just want the lightsabers, if you just want big action, you've got so much other Star Wars stuff to look at. They're like literally all the other live action shows. You could go look at those. If you want a slow burn, nice political thriller, that is what Andor is doing well. And then it still has some good action too. So that's the nice bonus.
Is it Disney Plus?
Yeah, it's all there Disney Plus. It's
awesome.
Our lives are
Disney
Plus.
Yeah, that's true.
Star
Wars shit. Yeah.
It's all Disney Plus.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Twitter and at the Filmcast Podcast at thefilmcast.com.
You can find Sam online at...
at Sam Rutherford and, of course, on Engadget.com.
And if you want to send me all the things the Pixel Watch's case reminds you of, or all the other things that it, you know,
send us
feels
your HTC
like,
memories, because
oh,
I know you've
Jesus
got
Lord.
Them. Yeah.
Not those. Anything yeah, those. But those. You can send them to me.
If you want to rag on Sherlyn for having too many tabs open in Chrome,
oh,
please
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
They're all on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, because that'll help people discover us. And subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Oh, y'all know I love the fondle shit.